someone else that might need a bit of a recovery after the next 3 weeks. Michelle Carey, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much. It's a real pleasure.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure to have you, and it's criminal that we haven't had you in on Sunday Arts Magazine before, because you are such a powerhouse in film in Melbourne and I guess internationally as well. You've got that focus. And we will get into all things MIFF very, very soon. But let's go back a few years. You know, when did your... Let me start with, you know, when did your love of film begin? Can you remember when that started for you?
That's always a big story. Well, look, I mean, I guess like anyone of my generation, I was a child of the 80s. You know, I grew up loving film and was lucky to be in that generation where we'd still go and see films like E.T. or mm-hmm. The Goonies on the big screens. I've always loved film in that way. But I think in the 90s, I guess I was an angsty teen at university, and I was really in sort of music and art and really dark literature and bad poetry and all that kind of thing. And went on an overseas trip to Europe and discovered film there and sort of came back and decided that's what I wanted to do.
So foreign film, was it, or was it more universal stuff?
You know, it's funny, it was actually foreign film first, and I'm sort of getting back into more mainstream stuff as I go along, which often it's the other way.
Yeah, because, you know, like foreign, you know, like in Europe, foreign film is so popular still to this day, and it's such an art form, isn't it? Mm. Where, you know, like we beat over the head so much with the blockbuster from America, aren't we? And especially these days, you know, like Brendan, his film review earlier, and we did the War of the Planet of the Apes. Is that what it's called?
The Planet of the Apes.
Something. Yeah. And, you know, like, and I actually said, oh, you're on here, I want to get out of this. But, you know, like, Americans still do some really great film, but they're getting lost a little bit, aren't they, in this blockbuster that's all-consuming.
It's so true. I mean, there's a lot of great films being produced in America and England, as well as in foreign language. And a lot of them are made by studios, sometimes these same studios that are producing the blockbusters, but they just don't have the same marketing.
No.
And I think, I guess, I don't know, I mean, you don't want to generalize about generations, but I guess some people like to go with what's familiar. And if they know the Planet of the Apes or the Marvel comics, you know, they just go see all of those. Mm. And I think what we're really interested at MIFF is also how do we get younger audiences to discover the plethora of films out there.
Yeah. And so you've been with MIFF for how many years?
I've been with MIFF, this is my 10th year.
Wow.
Which is,
a long time.
It's a long time, and it's gone so quickly. Is that what they call life? I don't know.
Yeah, and you used to be in this building, weren't you?
Yes, yes.
Many years ago.
That's right.
Yeah.
I miss being here.
Aww. And what's the changes that you've picked up with the festival in those... Well, you've been running the show for the last 7 years.
Yeah.
What's the big change? Have you noticed anything?
Yeah, we really have. It's been interesting. I noticed maybe around 5 years ago just an explosion in social media and sort of a new generation of cinephiles who are on social media really discovering different corners of the program and weren't just going for the big films. And that's been really exciting, and sort of a new generation of, I guess, the cultural commentators and critics. And that's what's really sort of inspired and encouraged us to show those unusual films as well. Otherwise, it's easy to just think no one's interested.
And now, you do such a great job at MIFF of encouraging the next generations of film critics. Can you talk a little bit about that, of, you know, if people want to get involved for next year?
That's right. So what you're referring to is our Critics Campus program. So we run, it's now in its fourth year, we run a program over a week where we put a call out for 8 Australian emerging critics, I guess we call them, people who are probably not quite getting paid yet, and we invite them to come to MIFF. We pay for everything, and they all get together and undergo a series of intensive workshops as well as one-on-one mentoring from Australian and international critics. So it's quite an intensive program, but, you know, we like to think it's developing the next generation of critics, and it's sort of about craft, but it's also about, you know, how do you get work? How do you pitch? How do you work with editors, publicists, all that sort of thing? So it's really, I think, invigorated the whole festival.
Now, we did a bit of a jump before from your love of film and the art form that film is, but then how does that go from that to then being in the artistic director of a huge festival such as MIFF?
Yes, I ask myself that every morning, Brendan. look, I mean, I guess I come from a small city that's not Melbourne, and I guess everything I've ever done is I've always done very passionately and very intensely. So I guess I just self-educated and, you know, built up my skills, volunteered everywhere, as we called it back then. Now it's interning. And, and when I moved to Melbourne, you know, same thing. I just got involved in places like ACME and RMIT and the Melbourne Cinema Tech as a volunteer, and just sort of worked my way into MIF through that way. And then I guess I was programmer, I should say, at MIF as well, which also, you know, it's kind of a natural path into being an artistic director, I guess. So I guess when the job came up, the board felt I was really well placed for it, and I hope I've proved them right.
Well, I don't think you would be around for 7 years if you hadn't. But, you know, David sort of alluded to this before, but what have you learned on a personal level during that 7 years? You know, have you been able to keep that love of film, having to see so many per year? How do you keep that love?
Yeah, it's a really good point, because I do love film, but gosh, there's just so much of it. Mm. There's so damn much of it. And you don't want that thing you love so much to be the thing that just kills your love for it.
Yep.
I guess it's like any art form. So to be honest, we just really focus on the good stuff. Try and see films on the big screen where possible. We have to watch a lot of films on what we call screeners, like on small laptops.
Is that hard? Because well, I've done it and I don't like it.
No, you know, I don't really either. It is hard because what I make sure I do is, if I'm doing that, I try and wear headphones because I'm mm-hmm. really into sound. Yeah, I love really intense loud sound.
And the other thing I do...
Turn the lights off and turn your bing bongs off, people. Always turn the phone off. Not on silent, off.
Yep. Mm. And do you travel to many of the other film festivals around the world?
Yes, absolutely. And that's certainly one of the peaks of the job. But it's also the thing that most, keeps me passionate about the role, is seeing those films on the big screen at festivals. And when you're seeing them at festivals such as Berlin or Cannes, you are literally among the first in the world to see it, so mm-hmm. there's that added excitement and heightened energy around it.
And what about, and I'm sure our listeners want to know, and I do, Cannes Film Festival, it must be such a huge juggernaut now.
It is. It's getting bigger every year, and, I mean, I can't imagine what it must be like to live in Cannes in this sweet little French village and then just all these people descend on it once a year, because most of the people you run into are you know, internationals, or they're from the industry. So it's really quite crazy. It's a really small place too.
Yeah, yes.
So it's just completely packed. But, you know, you got to sort of really get into it. I guess it's just like a giant mosh pit for 10 days if film festivals would ever have such a thing.
And you don't tire of that? You know, like you don't think, oh gosh, you know, like here I go again, you know, the crowds, like all of that, hard to get around that small town?
Amazingly, no. I mean, look, maybe by the end of your 10 days there, you're quite ready to come home, I won't lie. You're always ready to come home and see your family and so on. But I think whenever Cannes do their announcements every year, you can't help but get swept up in all that excitement. And then you arrive on the first day and, you know, it's gorgeous blue water and it's beautiful weather, and it's super exciting. So Cannes I definitely never tire of.
I love that. Well, Michelle Carey, we've got so much more to chat about, and we're going to get into the MIF program in just a little while. You're on Sunday Arts Magazine on Joy 94.9. But Michelle, thanks for sticking around firstly, but let's get into the nitty-gritty. Well, we hesitate to ask any of your favourites, but what do you think people what are people already flocking to? What are some of the biggest sellers so far?
Yeah, certainly. So we have a section called Headliners, which is where we put all our big films, for want of a better word. And a number of those have sold out already, and they're in the Comedy Theatre, which is a really huge cinema. So I think people are really hungry for big, new, international art house films. Killing of a Sacred Deer has been a really big seller. The Square, the Swedish film that won the Palme d'Or. Also Top of the Lake, China Girl, Jane Campion's TV series.
Now, can you tell us a little bit more about that? That's the whole series on one day, isn't that?
6 hours
on
Earth.
Wow.
And I wasn't sure how people were going to go with it, but they've really, it's sold out. So it's been really popular. I think people just love Jane.
It's funny because I was going to ask you this about when we were talking about Cannes and the fact of sort of the Netflix generation these days. Mm. And that is a TV series that will be, you know, on a streaming streaming service.
Yeah.
You know, how has that changed, without going into too much detail, but how much has that changed how you put the festival together?
Yeah, for sure. Look, it's certainly an issue. A lot of films we would normally screen are now going straight onto Netflix and aren't really playing a lot of festivals, so it's not just MIFF, it's a lot of festivals both here in Australia and internationally. But look, I mean, the way we see it is there's so many films out there. It's nothing to get upset about. It's, you know, it's a challenge, yes, and sometimes there are films we'd love that we can't get, but you can also say that about films in the theatre, because if someone releases a film that they want to go into, say, an Oscar campaign, we're probably not going to screen that film because it's going to go out in February. So it's not too different to a film screening in the theatre. But obviously it is changing the landscape.
I find, though, the lovely thing about cable and the streaming is that the quality of what they're doing now, and, you know, Top of the Lake is a classic example, and of course the big one, Game of Thrones, how that's changed so many people's way of thinking about what they watch on television. So, you know, like, it must be exciting for you, the fact that, you know, like TV series now, the quality is worthy of coming to a film festival.
It is, absolutely. I mean, just cinematically, even something like Game of Thrones, you mentioned, I mean, just beautiful looking, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's a good thing. What I would caution against is sort of this narrative that's out there sometimes, that people are just sitting at home watching, binge watching TV and not going to the cinema. Like, I still think cinema very much has a place in the world of culture, pop culture, art house, whatever. And I mean, it's funny, people talk about this new TV thing, and I was reading about Jane Campion, and, you know, her An Angel at My Table did screen at Venice in 1990, and that was, of course, a TV series. So it's not necessarily a new thing. I think it's just the sheer amount of it out there is definitely a thing right now.
Okay, so some of the other highlights that you think is worthwhile talking about today.
Well, I mean, gosh, where to start? We have 358 films, I should mention, over the 17 days. And what I really want to say is there is really something out there for everyone. We have our program out there, which is divided into different sections. So I mentioned the headliners section, which is a really great place to start if people want to maybe dip their toe into MIFF. So we mentioned some of the films there. Another really great one is BPM, which was a film from Cannes. It was the talk of Cannes. It won the jury prize at Cannes. It's a French film about the 90s queer activist generation, written by someone who was actually there at the time, and I think that's going to be a really big one. So definitely BPM is a great one. We've got some great music documentaries. If people are into this kind of thing, there's a four-hour Grateful Dead documentary.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Because, I don't know if you've seen this one or not, the doco, but, like, they're legendary. You know, like, people, you know, like, they've even got a name for the people that go to all their concerts.
Oh, the Deadheads.
Yeah, that's right, the Deadheads. Yes. It's hysterical, you know, like, how legendary they are. And is that the one where they all wear Hawaiian shirts or something like that as well, the audience, you know?
I don't know. I actually haven't seen this one, and it's right on my list to see, which is why I mentioned it. I mean, really, a festival like MIFF is the only place you're going to see these things on the big screen.
Yeah.
For our Grateful Dead documentary. So, I mean, that's just one example of the sort of thing you can see.
Now there's also a queer doco that's coming where it's the leather scene, for the leather scene here in Melbourne. What what's that one? The Tom of Finland? Is that you?
No.
Okay, sorry. I thought it was coming part of MIFF. It's not.
No,
obviously.
It might be somewhere else, but okay. Check it out.
Yeah.
What else do we have? Oh, gosh, so much. Really terrific Australian documentary, actually, in world premiere, about an artist called Anthony Lister. And he's a Sydney-based artist, so he's not as well-known. He's a street artist, but his art's really awesome. It's called Have You Seen the Listers, which is directed by Eddie Martin, who's a Melbourne-based director. Quite a fascinating portrait of a broken family and a really talented artist, and I guess sort of the price you pay for being a great artist, you know, which is debatable, but a really amazing footage in that as well. So that's going to be in world premiere. Also some awesome fashion documentaries, The House of Zed, which is on Zac Posen. He's a real character. And then also another one called Dries, which is on Dries Van Noten. So we've got a lot of great documentaries as well as sort of feature films.
Because a lot of people go to film film festivals for the docos, don't they? Brendan, you're pretty big on the docos.
I am. Unfortunately, I think I might have one booked in this time so
any
far.
Any that have caught your eye?
Well, I don't know yet.
Putting you on the spot.
Yeah. It really is difficult because that is, I guess, the double-edged sword of having so many great movies to choose from, whether it's documentary or genre films, like you've got the horror Night Shift program as well. It is really hard to try and see everything you want
and
to.
And sometimes you don't know, and sometimes on paper you might not think to see something, and then it ends up being the talk of the festival.
Exactly.
One other section I should mention is our sci-fi retro,
yes,
which I think is going to be amazing. So it's a big sci-fi retro looking at 20th century sci-fi, and then on the night of the 12th we have a big overnight marathon happening down at the Astor, which is 6 films in
a
row.
Awesome.
Yeah, it looks amazing.
Brendan, that's where you
I'm
be.
Signed up.
Oh, really?
But what I love though is, you know, they're not the easy picks. They're ones that maybe you haven't seen, definitely not on the big screen, but maybe not at all. There's a lot in the program I hadn't, and I'm a huge film buff myself, hadn't even heard of.
Oh,
but I love that.
And look, we haven't heard of a lot of them as well because, you know, the thing is, it's not just to see the greatest hits, because there are plenty of opportunities to see those. And, you know, they're all great films as well, but we want to go into those deeper cuts, as it were. Like, if you love sci-fi, you really got to check out this film. It'll blow your mind.
So you bring in people that specialise in sci-fi to, you know, like, help you with the program?
Yeah, we bring in specialists, and the sci-fi program itself was programmed by Al Kossar, who's our programmer.
Yes, we've had him in.
He really knows his stuff. So we do try, and he also does the horror stuff and a lot of the documentaries. I might do more of the features. So we try and get people who have a real passion for their areas. I think it makes total sense. Occasionally we bring in external people. I've co-curated a program with Alexandra Helen Nicholas, who's a wonderful film critic and scholar, called Pioneering Women, which is about women directors from Australia from the 80s and early 90s, and that's been really fun. So
well, I'm glad you mentioned that. I was going to bring that up because that's another case of, you know, films that haven't been maybe seen on the big screen or at all as well. So from a personal perspective, how does that make you feel, being able to share those kind of films with audiences?
Look, it's really great. Sometimes you get the nerves, like, oh, what are people going to think of this? And but people respond really positively, and that's just the best thing about the job, I have to say. It's just amazing to go down to the screening, stand at the back of the room and see how people are responding to a film. It's just, that's what it's all about for me.
And volunteers, you rely heavily on them, which is wonderful. You know, like, and the film festival, you know, like, you have hundreds, don't you?
400.
Wow.
And a lot of us started as volunteers, you know, and we've had great people like Adam Elliott come through as well. You know, a lot of people go on to become famous filmmakers, start as volunteers at MIFF.
And you can see some films for free as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is the...
Whether you want to or not.
that's a plus. So take us to another area.
Another part of the program. We've got a true crime documentary focus this year too. I mean, true crime's become such a popular thing, on, particularly with TV. You've got the O.J. Simpson or Jinx. And again, another wonderful program by Mr. Al Kossar. We've got, for example, The Death and Life of Marsha P. Johnson.
I'm booked in for that one. Very excited about that. Obviously not excited about the subject matter, but just the way that documentaries, the kind of evolving, aren't they? Whether it's true crime or whatever it may be, they're evolving into this other kind of art form at the moment.
Well, I guess the thing is, you know, I mean, documentaries, it's not that they haven't been made before, but they've really exploded in the last 20 years. And I think the more documentaries are made on certain subjects, the more people need to go further. It's like, okay, well, we've done the documentary on Amy Winehouse now. What are the other musicians? And this is a great example of a really incredible transgender activist called Marsha P. Johnson, who I don't think's been a household name in Australia, certainly.
Not really.
It's a discovery, right? And she, I mean, it's a true crime documentary, so I won't go into the details. Obviously, there's a really awful crime involved in this. But I think these sorts of documentaries are a way to discover bits of history that, you know, probably haven't come to light yet. And the other great thing is, I guess, with the advent of digital cameras, is there's just more and more footage from the last 20 years, whereas sometimes you can see a documentary about something that happened 50 or 60 years ago, and it's just not very cinematic because there's not much footage. So that's what I think makes documentary really exciting today.
Mm. So how about some advice for people that are starting out? You said the headliners is a really good place to start, but yeah, if people are trying to fill their couple of weeks up, sure, with some great things, how do they go about that?
I'd really recommend everyone get onto our website, miff.com.au. We have a number of tools there to help. So you can go on to what's called the discovery tool, and it will ask you a number of questions. It's not quite like being on the psychiatrist's couch, but, you know, hopefully it's not too traumatizing for people, and it can make some recommendations. Otherwise, go through our program sections. As I said, we've got a section on music, or on crime, or documentary, or horror, or Australian cinema, and just sort of go from there. So really let the program strands guide you, and watch trailers. That's the other great fun thing.
Mm. Mm. And when does it start?
Starts this coming Thursday, 3rd of August.
Whoa. Which is, here we go. And runs till
the 20th. So it's very long. It's 17 days. But having said that, don't think it's always going to be there. Like, it really comes and goes very quickly. And it's a thing you hear often. People say, oh, I meant to get there and didn't get. So
and the other thing is, you've got to book because, as you said, quite a few sessions already sold out.
They do sell out. But having said that, I should say, if there's something you really want to see and it says standby, head down to the cinema 15 minutes beforehand, and we have standby queues because, of course, there are always people that don't turn up. So hopefully we can get you in, but definitely book early.
Right, okay.
Now, before we let you go as well, opening night, Jungle, Craig McLean,
yeah,
and just an unknown actor in the lead, Mr. Harry Potter.
My favorite.
What I love, I'll get you to talk about it briefly, but what I love about this, you're doing multiple screenings of this one as well. Is that normal for the opening night film? Because I think last year, it was just the opening night, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, that one, we did a repeat on the last day for, we have caption screenings as well, which is really great. But no, you're right, we don't often do multiple repeats. It really depends on the film. Mm-hmm. This film is very special, not only because it has Harry Potter, a.k.a. Daniel Radcliffe, in it, and is directed by Greg McLean, but it's actually a film that Miff has invested in. So it's what we call a Miff Premier Fund film.
And it was made in Australia, wasn't it?
Film production's so complex. It was actually shot in the Bolivian jungle, which is where the story was set, and parts of it were filmed in Australia. It's an Australian production, but it's a big internationally set film. So because it's a film that we've invested in, we have certain rights to do repeats on it, which is really terrific.
Excellent.
And it's been so popular, so we thought, of course, we'll do some repeats.
Yeah. And so important that you are investing in films like this as well.
Yeah, massively. And I should say, it's actually the 10th anniversary of the Premier Fund this year, so people should really check out the films and the Premier Fund slate as well.
Excellent.
Yeah, we were lucky enough to talk with Grant Scicluna about his trajectory, and, you know, it was hugely in part thanks to Miff and the trajectory that sort of brings with it then.
That he got his film made.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's not easy for filmmakers, and we're so thrilled to be able to help where we can. Yep.
What's the website again?
miff.com.au.
Thank you so much, and good luck.
Thank you. We'll see you all down there.
Yes, see you there. You're on Sunday Arts Magazine, Joy 94.9, Michelle Carey from Miff. Get on it, people. You're on Sunday Arts Magazine on Joy 94.9.